Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. My name is John Valentine, and I am going to be talking about Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. I want to set the record straight on some things that not a lot of people want to talk about, especially when it comes to police and their rights to uphold the law in their communities. I wanted to start out by talking about the fact that George Floyd was a convicted felon. He had been arrested over 30 different times by law enforcement. He was very well known to law enforcement throughout the years because of his long rap sheet that he had in crime, whether it was theft, whether it was domestic assault, whatever it was, there were several things on his rap sheet that, so it wasn't like he was not known to law enforcement at the time that they arrested him the final time. They had arrested him, and you can find the videos on YouTube. You can find the videos online where they had arrested him, but he had put up a fight, and he had been refusing to comply with the orders of law enforcement that they were giving him to cooperate. And so they did what they felt they had to do to subdue him and to create the situation where he could not either hurt them nor himself nor anyone else. And so what they did was they put a knee on his neck to try to get him to comply, to stop fighting with them. And in the course of events, of course, Derek Chauvin goes on trial. And he is convicted of second-degree murder and manslaughter. And I think that police officers, I think that it is a very hard thing for police officers to try to uphold the law the best way that they can in a situation that seems to have a very difficult job associated with it and where situations have to happen spur of the moment where decisions have to be made that might not be perfect, but they help either spare the life of someone else or spare their own lives because they have families, their wives, husbands, uncles, brothers. They have families to go to at the end of the day. And so when they have to take a situation and they have to deal with it a certain way, they are villainized. So I want to take George Floyd, for instance, Breonna Taylor. Those were all false narratives that were pushed. Breonna Taylor was someone who had a boyfriend who had a rap sheet as long as my arm, and he had had an arrest warrant that was put out for him and Breonna Taylor. And so when police officers showed up to serve those arrest warrants and arrest Breonna Taylor and her boyfriend, he opened fire on police officers and she followed suit. And in the course of police officers shooting back, she was killed in the fray. But people did not villainize her boyfriend. They villainized the police for being too brutal and shooting back when they should have not done something. And that is simply not true. When police officers have to do a job that is not easy, they should have the right to take whatever force is necessary to get people to comply with what they are telling you to do. If a police officer tells you what to do or gives you a command, you should follow what that police officer is telling you to do because it's in your best interest. It's to save your life. And if you do not comply with a police officer, then it becomes your problem. You take a gamble with your own life. If a police officer decides it's within the best interest of the situation to either do what he or she has to do to subdue you, or if you are being violent, then you leave them no other choice but to risk your life if they choose that's the path that they have to take to quell the situation for you not to hurt or to kill somebody else. So I believe that there's things that police officers have been villainized over that is not their fault. I know that in our culture 20, 30, 40 years ago, that that would not have been acceptable. But now we have villainized police officers. We have stripped them of their authority. We have stripped them of their right to protect their communities. We have stripped them of their right to go after convicted felons and to deal with the situation in a way that is decisive, that is forceful, that gets the job done. Now we have set a precedent that we, the people, can tell police officers what they can and cannot do, or how far the line goes, or that they cannot cross the line. And that is simply not true. They have the right, and they have the ability, and they have the force, and they have the responsibility by the Constitution of the United States in their office of authority that gives them the right to quell the situation in any form that they choose to do so. That's their right. And we have to stop putting police officers in a position where they are collateral damage. Where was the injustice? Where was the outcry for police officers that were killed, innocent police officers that were killed during the riots over the last three or four or five months due to George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Black Lives Matter movement? Where was the outcry for those police officers that were killed, innocent men and women killed in the course of Black Lives Matter movement, rioting in the streets, destroying buildings, businesses, homes? Where was the outcry for that? There was none. When are we going to understand that we need to stand with our law enforcement, support our law enforcement? If you have a friend or if you are a police officer that is listening to me right now, I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear your story. I would love to hear your perspective on policing your community, or if you know someone who is a police officer, I would love to hear your perspective on how you feel about police officers having the right and the capability to deal with the situation the way that they see fit. We need to have this discussion, and we need to start talking about how we can support law enforcement in the best way that we can.
Hello.
Hey, James, you are actually live on We Are the Voice. I am actually covering the Derek Chauvin trial. I wanted to get your perspective on how you view how that situation played out in the verdict that came down.
I haven't fully been following it like that. I didn't know who you were calling me on a line or any of this was happening. Wasn't prepared. But
in season, out of season, my friend.
Huh?
I said in season, out of season, my friend.
Oh, sure. Of course. You're doing a prophetic call on the Derek Chauvin case?
I'm actually live on my Blog Talk Radio broadcast right now.
Oh, I didn't even know you were doing that anymore. Okay. I don't know. What do you think?
I think that it puts policing in jeopardy at this current point. Because 20, 30, 40 years ago, our culture would have never accepted things like defund the police, the villainization of police officers in the way that they do their job. I think to convict a man for how he went about trying to quash a situation where a man was not complying with his orders. George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, a lot of these situations were narratives that were pushed in a very false way to spin a narrative that does not exist in the truth. I think that a lot of people take to the streets to riot and to say, you know, an innocent black life was taken. And that's simply not true. There's some in this country that have been innocently taken, but George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, a lot of those situations were not an innocent situation. They played a hand in their own death. Breonna Taylor, she was dating somebody who had an arrest warrant that was being served along with hers that was being served. Her boyfriend started shooting at police officers. And in the fray, Breonna Taylor was killed. George Floyd, he was on drugs at the time of his death. There's videos on YouTube online that you can find where he was fighting against law enforcement, and they did what they thought was best to try to quell the situation to either stop him from hurting them or hurting himself or hurting anybody else. In the course of him being arrested, he had been arrested over 30 different times. I won't say that they did the best thing, but in the situation, how well do you really know a police officer's capacity to, oh, geez, I have a split-second decision I have to make. Let me go think about this for 5 seconds and think about how I should handle it. It doesn't work that way. I know police officers, and there's sometimes where they have to make split-second decisions that may not be a smart idea or the best idea, but they do what they have to do to quell a situation. I've watched certain police officers do what they have to do. It's not pretty, but they have a job to do. And the fact that we would throw a man to the wolves because he did not make a smart decision, and now he's going to be sitting in jail for the next 25 years, is not fair. Now we, the people, are telling the police officers how far that they can go and how far they cannot go. Have the people really taken over to that extent? Has our government really thrown our police officers to the wolves at this point? Police officers take the same oath of office that the President of the United States takes to uphold the Constitution and the law in their communities. And they have the right to use whatever force is necessary to make sure that the citizens of those cities are, one, safe, but two, are protected. And if that means that they have to use lethal force, if necessary, that's up to their discretion on whether or not to use that kind of force. But it's a tool that they must use and employ in certain situations. And George Floyd was a perfect representation of that moment that I think could have been done better. But at the same time, he was fighting them. He was on drugs. He was not in his right mind. He was being given orders, and he did not follow those orders. And so they did what they felt was necessary in that moment. And now Derek Chauvin is having to sit in jail for the next 20, 25 years for a situation that escalated very, very quickly that you can find on the internet. That, to me, is we the people telling the police officers, you can only go this far. You can only do these things, you know, or we will see it as, you know, when have we taken the rights away from police officers? You know, Black Lives Matter took to the streets over the last 6 months or so in riots, even here in Little Rock, even across the country. Where was the outcry for innocent police officers who were killed? Where was the injustice, the outcry for that? It wasn't about that. It was a narrative that innocent Black lives were taken. When do Black Lives Matter movement actually stop and look at the facts of the situation? You have Al Sharpton, who has never paid a dime in taxes in his life, who is standing with black families whose sons, daughters, their lives were taken, but we're not looking at the true narrative. We're not looking at the true facts. We're not researching what actually occurred. And yet Black Lives Matter movement has made a decision as to, regardless of what happened, what the facts were, or what a false narrative is, we're going to take to the streets, we're going to riot, we're going to break into homes, we're going to break into businesses, we're going to kill innocent police lives, and then say, defund the police. I believe that is a very huge problem. And people call it a systemic racial issue. It's not a systemic racial issue. This is an issue where we have to decide, are we the people, the citizens of this country, and are we going to let our police officers protect us, or are we going to be the very ones that start to strip them of their right to keep us safe in whatever means necessary?
I would like to address that, of course, your point of view comes from your own relationship with the said topic and your experience shouldn't invalidate anyone else's experience or viewpoint. So that being said, you must understand that not everybody's experience has been a healthy one with the police. Not everybody has had healthy interactions. Not everybody can say that they don't have family members that have died at the hands of the police. So those things being said, there's, I hear what you're trying to say and where you're trying to go with it, but at the same time, you have to realize that there's other people who have different experiences than you do. And there's different realities being played out all at the same time. So in your reality, those things that you're saying are true because that's what you believe and that's how your interactions have played out with the world at large. Now, from somebody that hasn't had the same experiences and has had things happen that were out of line, I would say to you that you have to really step back into God, what's your heart on this? Because, or else you'll never be able to see outside of your own perspective. Your own perspective is limited by your upbringing and by the things that you've experienced. But what I'm saying to you is, ask God to come into somebody else's experience. Because if you do, it would crush you. You would never be able to say the things that you just said. But I digress. This is why we have to take our time to try to look at the whole of a situation. We have to look at the whole of the situation. Yes, there's different instances where people do not do what they're supposed to do, and if there's bad interactions, it can be because of one person or both people. You know, we're talking about people. You know, the police officer person and the other person. Now, there are people who've been completely innocent. There are people who actually were, doing something criminal or high or drunk or whatever it may be, that they weren't quote-unquote innocent, but did they deserve to die? You see what I'm saying? We're talking about basically a use of lethal force. Did people deserve to die? There was a girl just a day ago who got shot, and she actually called the police. She called the police because there were some people who was going to attack her. They were going to jump her. She called the police. She was trying to defend herself with a little steak knife, and 9 seconds later, police shot her 4 times. the girl who called the police. You see what I'm saying? So there's different instances where we can point out these certain major cases that people are running along with, and there's a lot of narrative that's going on that represents the truth, and that's on both sides of this whole argument thing. There's those who fear not having the police. Then there's those who actually fear the police and not from criminal intent or anything like that. They just have a general fear of them. And the same thing is there's people who have a general fear of life without the police. So then how do we work past the fear?
I think that there has to be a give and take on both ends. It's kind of like if you think about it as kind of like a marriage. You know, you have one person that has one perspective, the other has another perspective, and you have to sit down and communicate about both of those perspectives and find common ground, you know, and how can we move forward. I think that the trust of police officers has been destroyed, and that is the fault of police officers. Let me make that very clear. I believe that. So with that being said, then it falls on the police officers in, you know, the cities across the nation to sit down with the people, you know, and to find common ground and a commonality in where do we go from here? What can we do better? How can we, you know, how can we open up a trust string with you, if you will, but it also has to do with the people actually coming forward and saying, you know what, this also has to do with us. And people say that it's a systemic racial issue. I don't believe that it's a systemic racial issue between two people or two factions. I think that it's more of a misunderstanding if we understood from police officers' perspective and if we understood from people's perspective, because I can totally understand it from George Floyd's family, their perspective, from Breonna Taylor's family's perspective. Yes, innocent lives were lost. And there's nothing we can do to change that. Police officers did not do the best job that they could have possibly done. But I think in the moment, it's not a, oh, geez, let me go take 5 minutes to think about this. It's one of those things that happens in the moment, and you just kind of have to let the chips fall where they may, and then you have to live with the repercussions of that. That's often enough where police officers find themselves in certain situations. It's a sad reality, but it's the truth. But then you have people like you who actually have a personal story of your past in dealing with police officers that you've told me several times. I'm not sure if you want to share that story, but
no, I'm good on that. I'm good on that front. Now, what I wanted to say is that also you can, you know what I'm saying? You can have the view that something is not systemic if you're not a part of the group, or if you don't present the qualities of that group, you cannot say it's not true because you haven't, you see what I'm saying? You haven't been identified as such.
Right.
Like, for instance, if I can't speak on something that's happening to a people group in a different country or even in this country, I can't aptly speak on their experience because I haven't lived their shoes.
Right,
so
right.
What we have to do in bridging the gap between people and different understandings is try to have some understanding of where this person is coming from and grow, having a growth mindset where we're able to collectively come into a better place together, because this standing on two sides of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil is always the debating, the ones and zeros, the red and blue, that system plays out into so many other things. Now, when we talk about systems that are in play, there are systems of qualified immunity. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay. There's systems of the Brotherhood. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay, so there's also things in the judicial system where usually stuff like this doesn't happen as far as a police officer actually going to jail for something like this. It doesn't happen because there's systems there in place. The look of shock on probably anyone's face that even though this was video recorded, the look of shock on many people's face to see a police officer going to jail for this, because we know that there's a set of systems that are there to protect. Now, I would say this, regarding the whole system of how things work in policing, there was somebody who had suggested a few days ago that some of the same tactics that are used in our military, that we should basically use those to overhaul how we do policing. Because you have to really understand that the police star, do you know where the police star comes from? The badge?
Yeah, I do.
Or the star? Okay, you know that's a slave catcher's badge?
Right, right.
Okay, so what we have to do is kind of, you know, when you build something bad, like if you, let's say you're building a treehouse and you build it bad in a certain way and it just doesn't serve, you have to find a way to overhaul it and make it better. So, and when we look at military, how the rules and things like that they have about using force, if they're actually policing an area, it's a lot more stringent than what we deal with in the regular policing.
Right, right.
Are you following me?
Yeah, I'm definitely following you.
Yeah, because the way that they do it, there's certain things that you're just not, there's a higher level of discipline, I should say, that has to be practiced by soldiers going out and doing different things. There's a higher level of discipline. There's a different level of expectation. And I believe that should be part of the training that comes forth, because you have to be trained to be able to de-escalate. And I believe there's other parts of their training, because you think about it. If they can send soldiers to a whole different country and have them patrol certain areas and places, there has to be some amount of de-escalation they have to be able to de-escalate in a foreign territory. How is that they can de-escalate in foreign territories many times with different languages, but we can't de-escalate and we're in the same country with the same language? Good question, right?
That's a very good question. That's a great question that should be explored. That's why I think that there's a misunderstanding about, communication. Some people have a very healthy fear of police officers and an unhealthy fear because of what people have gone through with police officers. That is solely the responsibility and the fault of the police officers for those situations. But then I believe that there is, for instance, when I went through my divorce, there were police officers that had to step into the situation to help get me out of the situation. And I know the police officer that was very strategic in that. And I had seen her arrest people before, and I had seen her throw people to the ground up against walls and stuff. And she's a real amazing cop. She can be scary when she wants to be and when she needs to be. But then a couple of weeks ago, I had ran into her at my job. She had come in to eat with one of her other fellow cops that she was on the job with. And her and I had a great conversation. She's the sweetest woman ever. So I think that you have a two-sided coin here, that there is the human side of police officers that I believe that some, maybe not all, there's bad apples in every single, shall we say, bag of fruit. There's always that those bad apples, those bad pieces of fruit. But then within that same bag, you have fruit that is really good, you know, and you have to kind of find your way through the good ones and the bad ones. And sometimes you find the bad ones and then you find the good ones, and you have to take the bad ones out of the good ones. And I think that it's the bad ones that give the good ones a bad name, you know, that overall is a problem. But I also think that people also need to understand is that in some situations, especially with domestic violent situations, it's police officers that have to step into the situation to either get both people out or to separate the two people. And luckily for me, I had a police officer that understood what was happening from my perspective, and she was strategic in getting me out. So I think there's something to be said that there's some police officers that do care about people. I just think that I think the communication can be a lot better between people and police officers that may start to bridge that gap.
Yeah, I believe that it's coming from two different types of fear. You see what I'm saying? There's two, usually in those bad interactions, there's two different types of fear going on at the same time. So, you know, and they're both fearing for their life for different reasons. Now, the cop's probably fearing for his life because he doesn't know what the person's going to do. But the person's probably fearing for their life because they feel like they don't have the power. So it becomes a difficult situation. But let's say, for instance, you had called the police to try to get help to get out, and they ended up hurting you. How would that shape your belief system about policing from that point forward?
It would definitely change my perspective on policing, you know, just because it would be a very personal matter to me, because of the friendship that you and I have. And that's why I say that there are bad apples. You know, some people have called police officers over the course of the last year, 2, 3, 4 years, who have had very bad situations that are very traumatic because of the way that police officers decided to handle the situation. And so that's why I say that there's a lot of situations that solely rest on the shoulders of incapable, untrained, unprofessional, unethical cops out there. Even when they go through their training, there's still cops that come out of their training and they're still as unethical then as they were before they went into their training as a police officer. That they don't care about people. They don't care if they hurt people. They don't care. They just care about carrying that badge and that gun, you know, and it makes them feel like they can take on the world and they have all this authority and this power. And there's a lot of people that abuse their power and authority, especially cops. But I think that there's some good cops out there. I just think that it's for instance, the Little Rock Police Department, they actually started a board of citizens and police officers to where when certain situations go down, there's a board meeting between police officers and citizens to where they can all sit down and say, okay, so this is the situation. This is how we feel about it. This is, you know, and they talk about how is the best solution, you know, to go forward in the situation and how it's dealt with. But they also are putting cameras on police officers to investigate and to always be watching as to what police officers do. And I think to some extent that does a disservice to police officers to put cameras on them, because if we watch every single thing that they do, they're always going to be thinking, is this going to be over the top, or am I crossing the line? Or, you know, it stops them to some extent from being able to deal with things in the moment if they feel like they have eyes on them in every second.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. We're talking about with the, you feel like, well, and then there's, but you have to realize there's other people who feel the exact opposite, that, you know, if the camera restrains them, then also it'll restrain them from doing things they shouldn't do.
That's true. That's definitely true. A couple months back, again,
though, you have to really look at this, that there are many people, when you talk about the military application, that are able to be more decisive and handle these situations differently. So the system that allows for these things to happen, it has created an environment where maybe people are coming into the force and they're not like that, but because of the protections that are there, you know, they get in there, and other guys, you know, they come into these different police forces, and there's literally officers there who say, I'm going to let you know this is the way it goes. I don't care what you learn in academy or what you learn in your criminal justice degree. You're going to do it our way or the highway. And that person then has the choice then, do I follow along with their way, even though I know it may not be ethically right? Because there's lots of groups like that within law enforcement. There's lots of groups of officers who have decided that they're going to do things their way rather than do things the right way. And so how do you address that?
I think that that's why more citizen and police boards need to be created. I think that the more dialogue that actual citizens have with police officers, especially police chiefs, you know, the heads of these police departments, should have, you know, a restraining power over them that sits down and says, hey, we the people, this is how we view this. This is how we feel about it. We know the facts of the situation, and this is how we feel about it. But at the end of the day, even with us sitting down and saying, okay, this is how we feel about it, we still have to let the situation run its course and, you know, find out how police officers are going to deal with the situation. But I think that there needs to be more citizen police boards where both of these parties come together and they talk about what needs to happen, how they, you know, how they view it, how they feel about it. And then they have to leave the answers up to the cops at that point. The cops know how the people view it, how the people feel about it. And I think that according to how the people feel about it, you know, they should be accepting of how the people feel about it in the way that they approach the situation. But at the same time, they should not feel restrained so much as to how the final outcome is in that situation, unless something does happen, you know, that like Derek Chauvin, tragically, what he felt he was doing right in the situation and in a split moment now has him sitting in prison for the next 20, 25 years. Unfortunately, that's where we've gotten to. And you have people like Reverend Al Sharpton that is saying, you know, until the laws change, we're going to keep on fighting. What laws need to change? What do we need to keep fighting for? And I think the answer is truth. What it comes down to is truth. What do we believe the truth is in the situations? If we're unwilling, and just go with me here for a second in this conversation, and this is just a hypothetical. If we're not going to open up our laptops, our computers, our phones, and actually do the research in the situation to find out what actually occurred in the moment, we have no business talking about what the law entails or what laws should change or what needs to be done differently if we don't understand the facts surrounding the situation. It's easy for people like Reverend Al Sharpton to be, you know, screaming and yelling and saying that, you know, the laws need to change, we need to defund the police, when he hasn't even taken a look at the actual facts of the situation himself, especially a man who has $30 million in back taxes. And yet he's the one saying that the laws need to change. And he's coming from the black community.
John, you know there's a lot of people who owe back taxes or who should owe taxes. But anyway, we're gonna let that part slide. But anyway, see, what you're saying matters to you is evidence, factual evidence, something you can research, numbers, zeros and ones, letters on the paper. That's what you're saying matters to you and that everybody should go about your process. You see what I'm saying? I mean, everybody has their own system of logic. They have their own creative process. They have their own process as far as coming to a conclusion. And many people don't use the same, everybody doesn't use the same method. And so asking other people to use your method is asking them to play the game your way.
I get that, but let's hypothetically say if, let's say, a white life is taken, okay? My mom's white, my dad's black. Let's say that I go riot out in the streets because a white life was taken by whoever, and that gives me the excuse to go bust into a home or bust into a building or, throw fire bombs around and, you know, try to injure a police officer without knowing really what the facts are. Did that make any sense in the logic that it's all right to riot in that way when I don't know the person whose life was taken personally or the facts surrounding the situation? Is it just one of those things that is, to me, that doesn't make any sense that you can riot and injure innocent people. You don't know the facts of the situation. You don't know the person. It's just something that because you are of a different race or you're part of the black community, all of a sudden that gives you the race baiting excuse. I can take to the streets and riot and be violent. I don't know the person. I don't know the facts. It just doesn't make any sense to me how that can be justified under the law, especially under the Constitution. We have the right to protest, yes, but at what cost?
Well, you see, okay, see, you're saying under the Constitution, we have the right to protest, and people should know the facts, right? So, I mean, that's the logical approach, but after many people, after going through so many different things, you have to look at it like a pot of water boiling over, right? So that thing's been left on high heat for so long that now the top's going to boil off that thing. And the only ways you can try to do is to remove it from the heat. But the heat is constant. This heat that is causing the boiling pot is constant. And nobody's turned the heat off or moved it away from the heat. And there's also other factors. You have to look at this. It's like, you know, which was once described prophetically as the perfect storm, right? So this is not what's happening with the riots and things like that. It's not just about a person dying or the police or things like that. It's about years on top of years of stuff that has escalated to a point where now it is boiling over. So you have to look at all the different movements throughout the past 50 to 60 years where there was silent marches and peaceful and all these different things. That has been tried before. You see, if you're a part of people where the leader who was calling for peace and was an actual doctor preacher and really preached nonviolence to everybody, and then to see him get assassinated, what would that teach you? It would teach you, I mean, at the same time, it would, you would try to follow his teachings, but then the man who you're trying to follow, who's preaching peace, gets shot. So what's the point? You see what I'm saying? After a while, when you, like the heat in the pot analogy, right? After a while, you get to a point where you reach basically like a certain critical mass, right? Emotionally, mentally, to where you don't care anymore. Have you ever been abused by somebody to where you don't care anymore, and then your actions thereafter are suspect or wrong or things you have to reflect on later on because you've got to a point where you're past logic. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true.
That's what a collective of people are experiencing right now. It is abuse for so many years, so many generations, to where now it's starting to manifest where either you do something about this or it's going to be a problem. You see, there has to be recompense. There has to be recompense. That was what there's a cycle in the Bible where there's things that are done, then there's recompense. Things that are done, there's recompense. You know, whether the recompense be good or bad, the judgment be good or bad, there has to be times and seasons where judgment is done so that things can reset. Things haven't been reset because the people have not lived up to what they said in the beginning. There's people who have said this, that, you know, the Constitution and Bill of Rights were a lofty hope rather than a real reality. And even still today, it's not a reality. It's closer to a reality than it was when it was written, but it's not. We haven't lived up to what we've written about this country. So how do we live up to that?
So as I am live on We Are the Voice on Blog Talk Radio, James, what would you share with my listeners? I have a particular question that I want to ask that, you know, people would say that conservatives should never ask. Do you think that Donald Trump, or as known as President Donald Trump, when he began as the law and order president, do you think that he did a disservice to our law enforcement, putting kind of the spotlight on law and order as far as putting kind of a target on their back? Do you think overall in the last 4 years he did law enforcement a disservice?
You know what? I never really put that together that way, but I mean, it could be, because when you look at the political machine, you can throw different things in to increase your odds or increase your rating amongst the people. They take all those polls and figure out who people are like. And sometimes they take on things and it may or may not do the best for whoever they're partnering with, but it does help the politician. So it could be that could be another element to this, but I believe that the pot of different things that have gone on is now boiling over. That's the main reason why we're having these problems. And there's things that have been unchecked for too long. And so what happens is you start to have society and morality degrade over time because when we haven't done anything about a certain issue, then now we turn to be more animalistic than human.
Well, I
because
had taken
there's,
time,
there's no rules.
I had taken time to think about it, and the more that I thought about it, it started to make sense that, you know, when you start to come into a presidential election and you start to, you know, talk about law enforcement and, you know, the need for law and order, what you do is you start to put a target on law enforcement's back, and you start to highlight a specific thing, which it then puts the eyes of the rest of the nation on that one issue that you're running or campaigning on. And the thing is that a lot of what happened under, you know, during the time of George Floyd and, you know, Black Lives Matter, it was not really sparked with George Floyd. I feel that it was sparked with the fact that the eyes of the nation were put on law enforcement, as in technicality, you know, law and order. We're a nation of law and order. Donald Trump came into power and he put the spotlight on police officers and law enforcement. And so you had this thing that started to come to the surface, and it literally started to spark outrage that finally gave, you know, the final kind of over the tipping scale. And then George Floyd just put it into oblivion at that point. Did you ever make that connection?
Well, I do believe that, of course, politicians can highlight certain things now, you know, from previous conversation, that the words law and order, or saying that I'm the law and order president, is actually a reference that has many other things attached to it. And as well the different meetings and things that were had with the police and the different things that he had said to them, you know, do you remember any of the clips that he said to police officers?
Yeah, I had researched some of that, and one of the things that he had made a promise to law enforcement about is that, you know, he would stop them from being able to be prosecuted for certain things because they had the right to use any lethal force. He had said it for 4 years as president that, you know, law enforcement has the right to use lethal force if they feel necessary. And that's when we started to see more of those lethal situations starting to play out, because he had said, you know, they have this right and I will not let them be prosecuted. Well, George Floyd happened, and because Donald Trump was not reelected, Joe Biden was. The same officers that were serving under President Trump are now in jeopardy of being unfortunately convicted in a jury of their peers because they were given the green light, so to speak, to take those steps, and now they're having to pay for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but see, that's all part of the power structure, right? So by him saying he's okay with them doing A, B, and C, and then figuring that it's okay to do it, then now you have a situation where is lethal force always necessary, or are you doing it because you know you'll be bailed out?
I think that part of it has to do with the fact that police officers knew that under Donald Trump, they could do just about anything and they would be bailed out. Derek Chauvin tragically has to pay the price, I think, for thousands of police officers at this point. I think that they had to throw him under the bus because it was setting a precedent. And I hate to go political on this, but I think under Joe Biden, now it is one of those things where he's willing to let somebody be thrown under the bus for something because it serves a greater agenda. And, you know, the people feeling like justice has been served. My original question that is now coming back full circle is, was justice given in the guilty verdict? Or is this just a very sad day for the United States and a specific police officer being punished for something that really was a spur-of-the-moment situation that occurred?
I believe that it's more complex than we'd like to believe that it is, because you have to really look at the complexities of it, the fact that even the call to the police was made by some sort of assumption, because from what I heard in different reports is that the money wasn't counterfeit. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah, yep.
And so none of the interaction shouldn't even happen. If they didn't want him in the store or had suspicions about his money, they have a right to refuse service. But I believe that sometimes you have to really look at the series of events. None of that would have happened if they wouldn't have called him in the first place. Right?
Right.
So it goes a little bit deeper than, choose George or Derek. It goes deeper than that, because you have to look at it, well, why did the person at the counter not really look over the bill and call the police in the first place? Well, that's a whole nother issue. Who knows why? See, so the hole goes deeper and deeper, but I do believe that, that in this situation, that by them convicting him, they are trying to set a precedent, and they're trying to keep the peace. You got to understand, John, we've been in this whole pandemic mode for over a year. So you talk about people, a lot of times you got to look, French Revolution, different times in history where people have, people start to get unsettled when there's financial instability for their current financial class, right? So with all the uncertainty that's out there in the world right now, and them knowing that they can't just return the world back to normal to people, there's a lot of people that are really probably more or maybe as upset about that than they are these other things that are going on. And so when they go out, because they're going out from a position of fear of economic security, when they go out there and protest and they see somebody's done knocked the window open or something, they're like, well, I'm going to get mine because I don't know what the future holds. So it's just different versions of fear.
Right. That makes sense.
See, so you have to look at the whole climate of it all together. The whole climate looks like there's a bunch of different political, social, financial issues that are all going on at the same time. And they're all, you see, they say you of course, I think it's you see a person's character when they're put through the fire, right?
Right.
Basically, within us comes out when we're going through trials. Well, America as a whole has been going through a trial for over a year now. And the riots behind George Floyd, they started in the midst of a fiery trial that was already in place. So it doesn't really take much to start a fire if you got dry wood everywhere and hay everywhere. If the situation is set, you know what I'm saying? If the atmosphere is set for it, things can ignite because people are already feeling like, oh, man, what are we going to do? People are getting sick. Am I going to die? Different things that are going on, economics. A lot of people, when they're not secure, they act out. Insecurity makes a lot of people do weird stuff. And, there's no need to really like riot and burn up stuff and everything like that. But if you look back into your, research, of course, most of the peaceful protests that did end up with like rioting and looting, the people who came in there, they came in there to stir it up that way. It wasn't the original people who were trying to do it. So there was another group added to the group, right? And they began to do different things, right? Now, that's on another level when you're talking about provocateurs or, people who come in to riots or political situations to cause additional turmoil. Those people are the ones who, you know, that's actually one of the things the Lord hates, right? Those who stir up strife or cause division. And that's what the, you know, those people are sent in to do. You know, just the
right.
same way as many people are saying that they believe there were provocateurs at the Capitol. So if it's said that it can be true on one side, it can be true on both sides. So then what? So then you have two different groups of people who are, I mean, you have two different movements. See, everything's been polarized. That's the problem we're having now, is that everything's been polarized so much where it's been divided into not just color, but factions of mindsets and beliefs. The red and the blue lives matter and the black lives matter and there's so many different things. The Proud Boys, the New Black Panther. It's so many different factions and groups going on right now where it's something we really got to look at. But anyhow, I'll talk to you soon, bud.
Thank you so much for your time, James. Have a great afternoon.
All right, you too.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening today. I was just live on the air with my friend James Hart. We were talking about Derek Chauvin and policing communities and the rights of police officers and the perspective of the people versus police officers and police officers versus the people. If anyone is listening to me today and you just happen to click onto my live show, We Are the Voice, I would love to hear from you on this topic of police officers and the people, especially if you believe in the guilt or the innocence of Derek Chauvin as it relates to George Floyd. I would love to hear from you. So please, by all means, call in. The number is 563-999-3402. Again, that number is 569-999-3402. So please call in. I would love to hear from you.
How you doing, man?
Good. How about you?
I'm just fine. I'm Tahaka Mana LB out of Jacksonville, Florida. I have a few questions for you because I've been listening to you, and I heard the whole interview with you and the brother that was online. But my question to you is, can you define for me, in your personal opinion, if you got it handy, what does the word crime mean? What is that crime? What is it?
I think the
if
word
we don't have
crime,
it handy now, don't waste no time if you ain't got it handy.
No, I do, but see, the word crime, very loosely translated in Webster's dictionary in the English language,
mm-hmm.
has a connotation to it that has to do with someone's perspective of a situation or issue that arises. You know, there's the crime. There's the crime of, you know, if you are a child molester, or if you murder somebody, or mm-hmm. there's different areas of crime that have to do with people's interpretation of the law or the way that they see the situation. So there's not a definitive answer I can give you to what is a crime, because a crime is always dictated by what people's interpretation of that situation is.
Okay, fantastic, man. I mean, you helped me out. Now, my next question is, the natives of this land invited the Spanish and Europeans in this land, and if they didn't, and they came in this land, and took over, and accidentally murdered and lynched the natives of the land, the natives came out with this word called crime. Is that correct? Or did it someone else do it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so the natives who were being murdered came out with the word crime, or the people who were invited came in and did the murdering and created the colleges, universities, and institutions, came up with their words called crime and criminal and violence and murder and all this stuff. My question to you is, I'm back to square one. The word crime, murder, and violence, the reason why I'm asking you these things, because there was a little boy of African descent. His name was George Stinney. He was going on 9 years old. He was accused of something that he couldn't even spell, but he was taken by Europeans and put in an electric chair and killed. So when we get to this situation about the police officers that the whole world saw, put his knee on a Negro man and murdered him in cold blood, why will we need to do an investigation? Why would we need to have all these things about we need to get to the bottom of this when the whole world seen the same thing that's been happening since the invitation of the Spanish and Europeans coming onto the land? Because they had to be invited. Otherwise, how could he come up with a word named crime? Help me out, man.
Yes, of course. Everyone saw the very same thing. I'm not challenging that, and I'm not saying that George Floyd died for a lost cause. I'm not saying that his life was a lost cause. I'm not saying that, you know. Everyone saw the exact same thing. However, not everyone understood what his past history was with law enforcement, and not everyone understood the rap sheet that he had. He had been arrested over 30 different times. Some of it had to do with drug-related crimes. Some of it had to do with domestic violence. Some of it had to do with theft. So he was very well known to the police. And I'm not saying that the police did everything right or that they should have put a knee on his neck. I'm not saying that that was right to do. I'm just saying that in some instances and in some forms, I personally know police officers, and the stories that they tell me of some of the situations that they have to deal with that's not made public or not picked up by, let's say, local or national news channels, sometimes officers have to make a split decision in the moment, and then they have to live with the consequences of that moment, whether they were good or bad. It's up to people's interpretation. And again, my mom's white, my dad's black. So I have interpretation invested on both ends of the situation, because I am part black, I'm part white too. So I see both sides of the coin. I'm not saying that law enforcement did what was right. But I also think that in the moment, they probably felt like they did what they felt that they had in the moment, and now they're having to live through the consequences of that decision. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Well, I thank you so much for helping me out. But I have one more question for you, because you say that your mother is white, and you say that your father is black.
Yeah. Right.
Is that correct? All right.
Yes, it is.
Well, could you? I really need you to help me out with this one, because I think, and tell me if I'm incorrect now, if there's a land called China, there's a people called Chinese. If there's a land called Japan, there's Japanese people. If there's a land called Korea, there's Korean people. If there's Australia, there's Australia. If there's Britain, there's Britain. There's England, there's English. If there is India. There's a people called Indians. So on the human map of geography, can you tell me where white land and black land is? And the reason I'm asking you that, because everything is matching, but you told me that your mother was white and your father was white, and I know where England is, and I know where the English people are. I know where China is, and I know where the Chinese are. So where on the map of human geography is black land and white land? Where is that?
There is none.
Okay. All right. So we have a brand. So we, because I'm looking at this thing, and we have black people and African-American people and Black Lives Matter. And there's no such thing. So why should we be upset about it? And why should we be concerned about a thing called crime? Because the original individuals, both Spanish and Europeans, were never invited. They forced their way upon the land. The natives never created or come up with a word called crime. The murderers, the rapers, and the extortioners and killers are the one that have the colleges and universities that have the definition for the word crime. So when we go back to the police that did what they done, what do you think is the solution for the victims to do? What do you think? Help me out about it.
I think that, one, the victims actually have to take a step back and actually look at the facts of the situation. And that's not to diminish what they have to go through, what they will have to live with for the rest of their lives. I'm not diminishing any of that. Please don't hear me saying that. What I mean is, Breonna Taylor, for instance, George Floyd, there were extenuating circumstances surrounding how those situations played out from the very beginning that I think tragically was a good indicator of how the situation was going to play out in the very end. Breonna Taylor, you know, people say that she was killed, you know, and she was an innocent person. No, she wasn't. She was not an innocent person. Police officers have a duty. They have a job. They have bosses. They have supervisors. And when they're told to do something and they go out and they do it, in the storyline of Breonna Taylor, she was a woman that was caught up dating someone who was a known drug trafficker who sold drugs. She herself had gotten involved in the world of selling drugs. And for that reason, police officers were given the job of serving them their arrest warrants. And again, my point goes back to, when the police tell you to do something, you do it. It's for your own benefit. The police officers went up to the door. They knocked on her door and they said, "This is the police. We're here to serve your warrants." What was the response the police officers got? They didn't go in and barge down the door. They were shot at from behind the door. When you shoot at police officers from the very beginning, you're setting yourself up for a situation that's not going to end well. Unfortunately, because her boyfriend, or some people will argue that it was her that actually began shooting, I can't say either way, we'll never know. Someone was shooting from behind that door. Police officers responded by shooting themselves. And unfortunately, it was her life that was lost, tragically. And I'm not saying that the black community should not be concerned or that they should not be outraged. They should be. But there's a difference between being outraged and concerned and using the excuse of the outrage and concern to riot in the street so brutally and violently and to shed innocent blood.
I have to agree with you 100%. It doesn't make any sense for me, when a situation happens, why are you marching? Why are you even protesting? Why are you even raising your voice? It don't make no sense to me. and let me explain something to you, and I'm going to tell you why I'm saying this. Because in 1969, by the way, I lived out here in Florida. In 1969, we had a giant apartment complex. Because I'm in 100% agreement with you. In this apartment complex, there was nothing but us, the Moors and the Egyptians. This is all was down there, jet black. Now, we had a situation where if someone steal something, they stole something, domestic violence or anything like that, here comes this one particular Caucasian police officer down there to straighten everything out. When he come down there, he macing, he slamming his bat upside people's head and all it right here, until one day a phone call was made from the area down to the police department and said, we have another domestic disturbance. This same gentleman came to straighten it out. However, when he stepped out of his car, he heard the crack of a rifle from 2 blocks away that blew his brains out and throwed him all the way across the hood of the car. He hit him so hard his shoes came off his feet. From that day forward, for almost 3 years, there was peace in the valley. This situation involved crime from which way? The crime of the man who got himself killed, or was somebody else defined by crime that was created from the original murderers that invaded the land, pieces of the land, raped the women, lynched the people, and called themselves now officially in position to give us a define for a word called crime, and criminal, and jail, and all that. What do you think, man?
To answer that question, I have to go back to the original definition of how our U.S. Constitution was penned and signed. A lot of the things that were penned by our founding fathers were very, very highly, how should I say this? There were Western European thoughts at that time that our founding fathers listened to in the midst of declaring our independence from the crown. We still had some level of interaction with the Europeans, and they helped with the architecture of our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence. So a lot of what's found in our founding documents as a nation are actually part of the European belief system. And so I have to agree with you there. I support that theory. It's something that I've taken a look at and I've researched myself. With that said, we set up law enforcement so that solely the laws that our Constitution gives us would be upheld. That's ultimately why law enforcement was born to begin with. And it's turned into something that it was never supposed to have been turned into. And I believe that that's why we're having these problems right now, is that law enforcement has become something that it was never intended to become. Law enforcement was birthed solely that the laws governing us as citizens would be upheld. And unfortunately, that's not the understanding of today's law enforcement.
Well, I have to commend you, and I have a question for you. Is your daddy in there with you?
He's not.
Okay. Well, you tell him I say he's done a wonderful job, because you answered that very, very well. I got to give it to you. I'm going on now. You carry on, and you take care of the rest of your show, man.
Thank you. I would love it if you would be a regular listener. I would appreciate that. But I will speak with you another time.
What time you come on?
I usually come on right at noon every day. I usually am on here from noon to 2 p.m. in the afternoon.
I'm going to do is I host my own radio show on Blog Talk. My name is Tahaka, and I got your website up there. On what I'm going to do down in the comment section, I'm going to put my invitation for you to come in. Down in the bottom, the call-in number, all that will be down there, because I'm going to be on the air at 7 o'clock p.m., usually the last Sunday of every night. And what we are finna deal with this Sunday night is how to destroy white supremacy. That's going to be the topic of conversation. And my guest host will be Dr. Walter Williams, the author of The Historical Origins of Christianity and The Historical Origins of Islam. So you come in and you know how to work the controls and all that. You press one, we let you in, and we protect you until you say what you got to say. And you tell your mama and your daddy, I say, well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it. You have a great day, sir.
You too. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been a great day so far for We Are the Voice. My name is Jonathan Valentine. And I want to thank you for listening live on We Are the Voice. The call-in number is 563-999-3402, 569-999-3402. There is still some time if you would like to call in and give me your thoughts and opinions on Derek Chauvin and his guilty verdict, whether you think he's guilty or whether you think he's innocent. I would love to hear from you. I would also love to hear your opinions on what you think about law enforcement and the way that they do their job. There's still time to call in. I would love to hear from you. So please stay with me. I'm going to take a short break, and I'll be right back with you guys. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to We Are the Voice. I am your host, John Valentine. Today, we're talking about the Derek Chauvin trial and the George Floyd situation, along with talking about Breonna Taylor and the false narratives that have been spun and been pushed by people like Reverend Al Sharpton, who do not look at the facts of the situation, who do not look at the situation itself as to what occurred inside of the situations. If you would like to call in, the number is 563-999-3402, 563-999-3402. I would love to hear from you. Especially, I would love to hear from you on the topic of, is Derek Chauvin guilty or is he innocent? By a jury of his peers, he has been found guilty of second-degree murder and manslaughter. I would love to hear what you think and how you feel about it. I personally do not believe that he is guilty because police officers, they use whatever force they feel necessary to quash a situation that is getting out of hand or has turned violent or could hurt themselves. And that's what Derek Chauvin did. Everyone saw him, just like the gentleman shared with me. Everyone saw it online on YouTube that there was a knee on his neck. Everyone saw that. The world saw that. But not every single thing in that situation was reported on correctly. And the police officers were not given the benefit of the doubt in the situation. They were judged and condemned minutes after the situation happened in the eyes of the people. And just like the gentleman shared with me, what is a crime? It's something that, you know, people have an interpretation of, that there's not really a definitive, this is what a crime is. It's up to people's interpretation and their perspective on a certain situation. So I would love to hear from you on what you think a crime is, what you think about the situations between police officers and citizens, and is Derek Chauvin guilty or is he innocent? Do you think that he did the right thing or do you think he used too much force? I would love to hear from people on this today. There is still time to call in. If you want to talk to me live on the air, the number is 563-999-3402. And again, 563-999-3402. I enjoyed hearing from my friend James today. We had a very constructive conversation for our listeners as to the guilt or innocence of Derek Chauvin and the job that law enforcement has to, you know, protect its citizens, protect themselves. They have a human side just like we do. They just have a harder job than what we are willing to let ourselves believe. It's a very, very hard job for them to do. And at the end of the day, they still have wives. They still have husbands. They still, you know, have kids. They still have families that they have to go to at the end of the day when they get off work. They clock in just like you and I did. They just wear a badge and they wear a gun. They are charged with upholding the law and protecting the citizens of their communities. Sometimes situations play out that may not be fair, that may not be right, but the way in which they deal with it, with a situation is very important in the moment. And people have a difference of opinion on how far is too far and should police officers be able to use lethal force to stop the situation, even if it's just or if it's seen as being unjust. Police officers have to make split-second decisions when dealing with certain things. In the matter of George Floyd, the question that I ask that I'm posing to my listeners to judge and to weigh this is, at the time of his arrest and at the time of his death, why has the family never come out with his toxicology report? They will not release a toxicology report to the public. Why is that? Why is it that they are not willing to release the toxicology reports that were done and the autopsy that was done? They have not released the autopsy nor the toxicology reports on George Floyd. The question I would beg my listeners to answer and to weigh is simply this. The false narrative would be blown apart if George Floyd's family actually came out with the autopsy reports and the toxicology reports that were done. If they released them, the toxicology reports and the autopsy that was performed on his body would 100% show that he was intoxicated and high on drugs at the time of his arrest. That's why he was being arrested to begin with. But again, because he is from the Black community, people have seen it as it was a Black life that was taken. Oh my, we need to go to the streets and riot and protest and break into places, businesses, homes, and hurt people. And there's a place for concern. And there's a place for outrage, yes. But how far is too far? How far is too far until you're willing to look at the facts of a situation and actually weigh it and step back and say, you know what? This may have looked different than I originally thought. If you think that way, then see, the narrative of George Floyd starts to change. The narrative of Breonna Taylor starts to change. When you look at the toxicology reports, oh wait, I'm sorry, the toxicology reports for Breonna Taylor and the toxicology reports for George Floyd were never made public. And there's a reason for that. Those families had to hide the truth so a narrative could be pushed as to a Black life being taken to make it look like it was an innocent life taken by cops who were brutal. And I'm not saying that cops handled those situations perfectly or that they handled them right. But if you step back and you look at the facts of the situation and you actually find the truth, another narrative starts to come out that's different than what was spun by, let's say, CNN, Channel 7, Channel 4, Channel 11. All these liberal networks came out with what they said was the narrative of George Floyd, what they said was the narrative of Breonna Taylor, and none of those things were true. Yes, there was a knee on George Floyd's neck. Yes, everyone saw that. The world saw that. That's undeniable. But at the same time, we have to ask the questions, why are things being withheld in those cases by the families in those situations? And it's because if they brought the narrative forth and actually gave the public the truth, then the narrative that people have been fighting for the truth, this is a problem with people fighting over what's false and what's true, is because a false narrative can be pushed when certain things are hidden from the public view. But when you release something to the public view and people are able to weigh it and look at the facts, another narrative starts to come to the surface that's different than what they want you to believe and see and hear. It creates a place for you to be able, for you the person, to be able to weigh the facts for yourself to see the truth in the situation, that you would no longer see George Floyd as an innocent man or as an innocent bystander, but a person who was high on drugs. He was drunk on alcohol at the time of his arrest, with 30 different arrests on his record with law enforcement. Oh, wait, they've sealed the records. I can't say that. I'll get canceled. Again, cancel culture has just about destroyed the George Floyd narrative for those of us who are looking for the truth. Breonna Taylor, again, there were certain things that were withheld from the direct news outlets that came out with the story. A false narrative has been pushed for years. by liberal networks who do not want people to know the truth. They want people to hear what they want them to hear and what they want them to see. They don't come out with the truth. So if you would like to spend the last 17 minutes with me on my radio show live on the air, you can call 563-999-3402, 563-999-3402. I would love to hear from you. I would love to hear your perspective and your opinion on Derek Chauvin. Is he guilty or is he innocent? Is he collateral damage? And a much broader picture of what's happening in the United States. I would love to hear from you. So if there's anyone that would like to call in and speak with me live on the air, again, this is We Are the Voice. I'm your host, John Valentine. So please call in and let me hear from you on what your point of view is. Thank you. So I'm going to spend the last 15 minutes kind of recapping on the conversation that we had today. I had my friend James Hart live with me on the air this afternoon. We were talking about Derek Chauvin and the police and citizen relations over the last year and a half, 2 years. It was a very constructive conversation that we had on what police officers and citizens can do better. We also talked about how we bridge the gap between what is happening with law enforcement and the Black community. And then we heard from a gentleman from Florida who had some questions for me. And I want to publicly thank him for his questions. He's not listening to me right now, but I want to thank him for his questions and his constructive perspective for me that he gave. I want to thank him for calling in and sharing with us. And we had a very constructive conversation that I think is a very good place to start. Hopefully it'll be a connection for my listeners. Over the next couple of weeks. But I want to say that I will be live with you all every single day from noon to 2 p.m. in the afternoon. And I would love for my listeners to call in live on the air. I'll be talking about different things that are happening nationally. The next time that I am live with you guys tomorrow afternoon, I will be talking about pro-life and the pro-choice movements and their arguments, and we'll be taking a look at what is the truth. Should women have the right to say what happens with their bodies? Should women have the right to choose death? I will say that the narrative of being pro-choice starts to change when the fact is that if a woman is murdered and she is pregnant, then it turns into a double homicide. So even from a governmental standpoint, that is still a child in a woman's womb. And if you murder a woman who is pregnant, you're guilty of second or a double homicide. But doesn't that defy the very arguments that women use for pro-choice, that it's not a child in her stomach? Should pro-life people be able to take away the choice of a woman, whether she wants an abortion, whether she chooses that for herself? Or should the pro-choice movement be able to silence those who are very strongly pro-life? We're going to take a look at that tomorrow afternoon, and we're going to look at the truth of it. We're going to look at it from both sides. I personally am pro-life, but over the last year and a half to 2 years, I've been taking a look at the pro-life, pro-choice movement, and their arguments all over again. I've spent several years writing dissertations on this. And it's going to be a great conversation. So thank you guys for being with us. And my name is John Valentine, and this is We Are the Voice. Thank you for joining us today.